Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Danny, this is meant to be a serious exercise, and you're taking the piss.
No, it's not. This is the kind
of... It's a noble pursuit.
This is the kind of stuff that has made me virtually unemployable in British media today. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, and today I'm joined by the full team, Charlie Eccleshare, Jack Pitbrook, and James Moore. It's been a week since we last recorded one of these, and after a busy start to the transfer window... Am I right in thinking, Charlie, that the Spurs business has slowed down a bit?
Yeah, I guess relative to the previous few weeks, it has been quite quiet, but which I'm sure everyone's taking with their normal good humour and in their stride. Slightly itchy feet, but yeah, there's plenty going on.
Why the slowdown? Anyone got any ideas, or is it just be patient, the Don is doing his work?
Yeah, I think it, you know, certainly with something like Jed Spence... I mean, I was saying to James, I'm confident Spence will happen, and you know the noise is that it's just taking a bit of time. He was away with the under-21s, has been on holiday, etc. But that slight Traore feeling of it was all but done and then suddenly it wasn't. But I don't think that will happen. I think that one will get over the line. It might just take a little bit of time.
I'm interested in your timeline there, but we'll get on to Jed Spence, and I'll just so to load up that particular piece. We'll talk about Eriksen first. I mean, the timeline surely is he finishes playing... for the under-21s, yes. Then he gets down on his hands and knees and he crawls from wherever the last match was to the gates of Spurs and begs to play for them, yeah?
But that takes a while to get there, doesn't
it? That's all it can be.
Is anyone tracking him like people do with those flight tracker things?
Let's start then with one that, another one that should be very easy to piece together if it is to be pieced together. That's Christian Eriksen. Have Spurs gone cold? Was Christian unconvinced about the move? Has it been called off, Jack?
It does seem at the moment like the momentum in this particular negotiation is probably moving away from Eriksen joining Tottenham. That's been my takeaway from the last week or so. Clearly it's in Eriksen's hands. I'm sure he's spoken to lots of different clubs. But my impression is that of the different options that Eriksen will have, it feels like Tottenham is probably less likely to be where Eriksen ends up than it felt like a week or two ago.
Why would that be, do you think? I know you can't know this, but just what would your opinion be, your informed guess?
My informed guess is that Tottenham play a 3-4-3. They don't play with a number 10. Conte doesn't especially like playing with a number 10. They've got Kulusevski, who plays in the front three, and then they've got two incredibly hard-working central midfielders behind him. I know, you know, Eriksen did eventually play for Conte's Inter as a 10, but he spent a lot of time not playing for Conte's Inter before the time when he did actually manage to get in the team. So
yes, he only got into the team when Conte decided to try and be successful.
Is that fair? No, not really. But you can imagine that Eriksen might want... It makes most sense for a player as good as Eriksen to go to a team where he's the best player.
The Basuma arrival as well probably changed things because suddenly they've got four very, very good central midfielders. And even though we've talked many times about Conte wanting competition, about the five subs, about the Champions League, etc. It looks like they've prioritised things elsewhere. But it is a change, because even back end of last week, we were hearing, and we did a Q&A with our subscribers and kind of reported what we were hearing, which was that, you know, Spurs and Brentford look like they were in a good position. And I think Brentford remain in that. But obviously then the noises coming out of Spurs early part of this week were that, you know, that's not a priority for them. They're moving away from it. And, you know, I've spoken to people who said, never say never. It could change again. But certainly at the moment, it looks like that's not a goer, which is a shame, because Conte as well has, you know, he hasn't dampened that. I think in February he was saying how, you know, they'd consider making a move for him. And that was, you know, really early on when Eriksen was just starting out. It may have been March, actually, by the time Eriksen was playing for Brentford regularly. So, you know, and we saw how it did eventually work out really well at Inter. But, yeah, it might have to be one that kind of was a romantic idea but won't actually come to fruition.
James, just to prove, A, that you're on the firm, which is very nice indeed, should we, as Spurs fans, be slightly down in the mouth that Eriksen's not coming back? How do you feel about it?
I mean, I have to admit, I've probably dampened on it a little bit over the last sort of month or so. I mean, obviously, it would be great if he did come back, and clearly signing someone of that quality on a free transfer isn't to be sniffed at. But looking at the slightly bigger picture, if Spurs do have the kind of budget that we assume they do and can also shift a couple of players for reasonable fees, they should really be in a position to sign a player better suited to the manager's system and with more of their career ahead of them. You know, Eriksen is, what, I think, 30 now. And, you know, some of the other players Spurs have been linked with, like, you know, like Paqueta at Lyon, I think he's at 24. I mean, I'm not suggesting I've seen as much of him. I have of Eriksen, obviously.
I'm extraordinarily wary of buying another midfielder from Lyon. We've already had our trousers not just pulled down, but then cut into tiny squares in front of us.
There might be a part exchange option there, at least, if nothing else. But, yeah, I just wonder whether, actually, the slightly more pragmatic option might be to stump up a bit more cash and go for someone who is A, better suited, and B, is going to be a longer term option and a longer term investment as well.
Let's move on to Jed Spence then, because this has been ongoing, and quite apart from my crack about him, what should be on his hands and knees to their bloody stumps till he gets to the gates of White Hart Lane. What do we make about the fact that it is ongoing? But more importantly, does anyone believe this story that Paratici has been stood down and Daniel Levy has once again stepped into the breach to organise the negotiation for Jed Spence's transfer?
Yeah, I mean, without knowing the specifics of this particular case, it is certainly true to say in general that Daniel Levy is very involved in transfer business and has been since Paratici came in. You know, we've spoken about this a fair bit on the podcast. Obviously, there are some deals that have clearly got Paratici's fingerprints on, whether it's Romero, Kulusevski, Benton Kerr, Gullini, etc. Equally, there are some deals which are down to Levy. The biggest of all being Antonio Conte. You know, the signing of Antonio Conte in October, November last year was a Levy deal, not a Paratici deal. And even on recruitment, Levy is still, you know, busily talking to people and getting involved. And so it is very, very plausible to me that Levy would be involved in this particular one, even though, you know, I should be clear, I don't know the specifics of this particular case right now.
I mean, have any of you seen enough of Jed Spence, either for England or Nottingham Forest, to say whether he's going to be worth, you know, the actual, it seems to be not a struggle, but a little bit of a grind to get him to the club?
I mean, I was saying this to James the other day, just from conversations I've had with people in the game. Quite a few of them have said he's got that slight, and before this is reworded as me comparing him to Trent, but in a kind of very good going forward, not so good going the other way. I mean, the performance that Spurs fans might have particularly enjoyed was the way he destroyed Arsenal in that FA Cup third round tie that Forest won in January. But yeah, that's mainly based on kind of conversations I've had rather than having seen him a load yet. I mean, I'm planning on, as this gets closer to, you know, really sitting down and familiarising myself with his game, but having been burnt doing that with Traore, I'm going to wait until I'm really, really confident that's happening. I am not spending more hours watching right wing backs who don't eventually join Tottenham.
Well, I mean, he does, what's attractive to me about him is that the things he already has are fantastic, but of course at his age, it's possible that he will, you know, put 50%, 100% onto his performance levels that are there now. You never know how that flowering between 18 and 20 is going to affect him. And if he did make progress from where he is, what a fantastic player he would be. And if Spurs are forced to pay 20-odd million for him, in 2 years' time, I might be laughing up my sleeves at how small a fee that was. Meanwhile, let's move on then to, one wants to say a carousel, but it kind of merry-go-round, and eventually we'll have to stop with left-sided centre-backs. Now, we're still appear to be banging our head against the brick wall of Bastoni. Jack and Charlie, you two spend all your time sniffing around in the undergrowth of the transfer window. Where are we with the left-sided centre-back?
Well, I still feel like it's in Inter's hands, really. Bastoni's agent, Tullio Tinti, said after a meeting with Inter hierarchy again the other day that Bastoni will be staying, which, of course, he has said before, though we have talked before about how, you know, he might say that and it might not turn out to be true. I think the big question really is whether or not they sell Skriniar to PSG. If they do sell Skriniar to PSG, who are in the process, still in the process of finalising Pochettino's departure and appointing Christophe Galtier to replace him.
Best coach in France.
Then I think that means that Inter will be able to buy Bremer from Torino, pocket the profit, not have to sell Bastoni. But, you know, there's still lots of moving plates. They could easily not sell Skriniar to PSG and sell Bastoni to Tottenham instead. Or they could sell Skriniar to PSG, then realise there's another shiny new player they want to buy, and then sell Bastoni anyway to fund the new purchase. So I feel like it's all up to Inter at the moment, but let's wait and see, because I'm sure Paratici will have other, you know, other irons in the fire.
Charlie, you know, assuming that Paratici has actually approached every single left-sided defender from Hackney Marshes to the Maracana, why don't Spurs just go in and get Bremer themselves?
No, that's a fair point. But all I was going to say is that what it does mean is that Spurs, it's not like sometimes we've seen with Spurs and many other clubs where they've gone into a new season and you feel they have to have someone in once the season starts. That's not the case in this instance. You know, Ben Davis was brilliant last season and is more than capable of playing the first six league games or whatever it is of the season. If, and I'm not saying this is what I would want or advise, it does take a bit longer to get that deal right.
Can I ask you a question then? And I'll start with you, James, on this, actually, about these left-sided centre-backs. Are Spurs being realistic enough? Because you see them sort of being reported, at least, of sort of looking at kicking the tyres of Mark Gay at Crystal Palace. But unless you offered Crystal Palace astronomical money, they're not going to sell you Mark Gay, are they?
Yeah, I think shopping within the Premier League, obviously we have seen Spurs sign Bissouma already, although he had 1 year left on his contract. But shopping in the Premier League for a player who isn't in that contractual situation, I think is like totally different to even buying, you know, players. As we've seen, a club like Inter, who are, you know, champions a season before, season just gone, a Champions League club, a huge club, but clearly there are a lot of clubs of that standing in Europe who have financial issues. It means that, you know, even their top players are gettable in a financial sense. So, yeah, it's ludicrous that the idea that Inter may be more sort of malleable as a kind of transfer target than Palace, or players that Inter be more achievable than Palace
the
players.
The first transfer window post-COVID, that is the reality, that the Premier League, although it has suffered shocking losses on paper compared to its competitor clubs on the continent, is still awash, larded with money, and can, you know, and can still poke things like Inter Milan and say, no, we're going to keep on nagging you about this until the economic reality of it hits home.
Inter need to make a profit in the transfer market this summer, and Crystal Palace don't.
Yeah,
like that's kind of crazy, but it's the case, and that's the case for, I think, probably almost all Premier League clubs, I would imagine. Certainly ones as stable as Palace. It's all very well Deco wanting to take Rafinha to Barcelona, but Barcelona don't have as much money as Arsenal and Tottenham. So Arsenal and Tottenham will be able to meet Leeds. It will be easier, in theory, for Arsenal and Tottenham to meet Leeds' asking price than it is for Barcelona.
On this topic, I should say, Danny Taylor wrote a good piece today on how and why the big six might start selling to one another, basically on this theme, because no one else can really afford, you know, if you're City trying to sell Sterling and Gabriel Jesus, that, you know, that it's far easier to do that to Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs than it is to Real Madrid or Barcelona, for example, let alone clubs of Spurs and Arsenal standing in other leagues.
Listen, for the sake of the sanity of the listeners, and subscribers. Why don't we stop talking about transfers that might or might not happen and wait till something does happen. I want to focus next on something extraordinary, really. Given the optimism that currently surrounds the club, given the qualification for the Champions League, given the amount of goals Spurs got in the second half of last season, how exciting they were to watch on occasion, it's almost impossible now. And I want you almost have to unscramble the human brain and rewire it to remember it's only 1 year ago, 365 of your English days ago, that, James, we were in the absolute vortex of the managerial chaos at Spurs when they could not get somebody to manage the football team.
Yeah, let's not focus on the uncertainty of a transfer market, and instead let's talk about Tottenham's managerial situation of last summer. Let's focus on the copper bottom certainty involved in that. It is incredible how far the club have come. I mean, you could draw that line in the sand even more recently than that, probably. I mean, earlier this, you know, look, I mean, Jack and Charlie on the podcast were saying towards the end of the season how much uncertainty there was about Antonio Conte staying at the club, even beyond the point where they'd qualified for the Champions League. It still kind of seemed like there was a possibility he would go. So the kind of degree of certainty and the fact that we kind of have a vague idea what the team is going to look like and who's going to be in charge going ahead into this season, what that's going to look like, is quite a big departure from not only last summer, but also what we thought it might have been, what, 2 months ago, if that?
I mean, how will, do you think, Jack, 5-10 years down the line, people will look at the recent history of Spurs and Nuno Espirito Santo is going to appear like something like Ryan Mason. Somebody was on the firm, they got in to smooth them over a difficult period, and then got in the proper manager.
Yeah, I mean, even at the time, I think we all knew deep down that Nuno was a bit of a glorified caretaker.
I must admit, that didn't occur to me.
Two-year contract.
Easy for Tottenham to get rid of him if certain criteria weren't met. Clearly, you know, the ambition that Levy had that made him go for Mourinho, get him, go for Conte, nearly get him, that would not be satisfied by Nuno. Like, that much was obvious. So I think it was clear that that was only ever a stopgap. What is interesting, really, is if you take a step back, Tottenham have been not always good, but they've always had very good managers, all very famous managers, really since, well, to be honest, since Pochettino was appointed 8 years ago. And so it is really weird that they had these, you know, in the context of that, the 10 league games of Nuno at the start of this season. And so asking how exactly they came to that situation is a funny one. I think it's just one of those, look, we can talk about this all day, but when they appointed Nuno, I think they had to appoint Nuno. But the what is so curious is the sort of bizarre sequence of events that put them in that position where on the 29th of June last year, a few days before the players returned, they thought, well, they realised we have to do this now.
That is interesting what you say. What that looks like in the history books in 10, 15, 20 years' time is going to be really weird, isn't it? Because you'd have Pochettino, who I think it's probably safe to assume will be a very highly regarded manager.
Yes, absolutely.
For the rest of time.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho, who, despite, you know, the scoffing on podcasts like this one, is obviously one of the most successful managers
in the history of the game. And has proved that again at Roma, to be fair to him.
Yeah. And then Antonio Conte. Antonio Conte, again, a Premier League winner, Serie A winner. Who knows what, you know, did incredibly well with Italy in 2016.
He is both a Serie A winner and a Serie A winner, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And in the middle of there, you've got a guy who got Wolves into the Europa League and did sort of 6 out of 10 at Valencia.
The thing I always think is so amazing about that managerial search, and I've made this point before, I think, that is that for all it was so awful, they almost benefited from the fact that Nuno was so bad that they were able to get rid of him very quickly at a time when, A, the season was still salvageable and Conte was still available. Had they got someone in like Fonseca, who they were sort of okay with and pootled along to fifth or sixth or something, then that would have been far, far worse than actually the absolute disaster and worse hire that was Nuno. But I still think it will be looked back on as one of the strangest managerial appointments by a big Premier League club. You know, most you can understand the rationale. Mourinho, we've talked about many times, yes, for all that it didn't work out, you can see what they were doing, what they were thinking. Likewise, other managerial appointments that have gone worse, but you could still kind of see the logic. This one, I think even at the time, it was very hard to make the case that this was anything other than a very, very odd, unsatisfactory appointment.
Yeah, I think Charlie's spot on that it is unprecedented for a top club, which is effectively what Tottenham are, to get an appointment this wrong so it burns out this quickly. You know, big clubs do have to make sackings from time to time, but not usually this soon. So I imagine whether, you know, future historians of Tottenham Hotspur, hundreds of years from now, looking back on it, will see Nuno as a kind of Edward VIII, Lady Jane Grey figure who only lasted a few days in the big job before having to be replaced by somebody more suitable.
That's exactly the point I was thinking, that, you know, you have these managerial calamities, you know, Leroy or a senior or whatever, but Spurs aren't supposed to be Torquay, are they? And the big clubs just do not do this 12-week thing. It was amazing. We have to consign it to the dustbin of memory. And just, I suppose... And, you know, I've had my own issues with it. Just thank our lucky stars that Antonio Conte, for whatever reasons and whatever combinations of reasons, decided, all right, I'll give this a go after all. No matter how reluctant it may have been. And it is possible as well, you know. It may seem unlikely with somebody who's as toughly professional as Antonio Conte. It is always possible that when people get through the door, they fall in love with a football club. In the way that, I guess, Son has, for instance. We'll see what happens. We'll have a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about one for the future and possibly what the future is for that one for the future in the form of Alfie Devine. And then Charlie has picked his five-a-side team from the current Spurs squad for The Athletic. And you could read that piece, I think, tomorrow or Thursday. Yes, that's right. And we'll be telling him how he's got this so very, very badly wrong indeed. You're listening to The View from the Lane.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly, and with me is the full panoply of talent that this podcast can bring to you. I mean, of course, Jack Pitbrook, James Moore, and Charlie Eccleshare. Those who, you know, what scraps of football are left now will have noticed a fantastic finish and a very good goal by Alfie Devine for England's under-19s. I mean, I would guess it would be categorised these days as a wonder goal. Really good. And I know, Charlie, that you're going to write a big piece about Alfie for The Athletic. Just for those of us, you know, we don't all watch the Spurs reserve games. The jungle drums suggest always that he is the next one, in the same way that Skip leapfrogged over Harry Winks. Maybe he's the next midfielder off the block of the Spurs academy. What kind of player is he? Most fans want to see him play very much.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the piece is out there, actually. Went up this morning. And as you listen to this, I hope he hasn't put in a stinker of a performance for the under-19s this evening as we record. But on Sunday, he was brilliant and did score that excellent goal, as you say. He's, I'd say, essentially a number eight. He can also play as a 10 or as an inside forward. He's been playing for the 19s kind of nominally on the right of a front three, but he's basically a goal-scoring midfielder. That's his game, kind of getting on the end of things. Really good finisher, good dribbler, lot of presence. I mean, he is the man at that level. I mean, he's been brilliant for the under-23s. He's only 17, and you know, even in this tournament, most of the Austria team the other night were 19, and you know, that fair bit older and bigger than him. But he's one of these guys. He's fearless. He's been training with the first team. He was in a lot of matchday squads for the first team, including for the North London Derby. And as I report in the piece, you know, Conte is a really big admirer of his. And you know, the plan is for them to sit down and talk about a new contract when he gets back from the Euros. His current deal expires in a couple of years, so there's no massive rush. But the plan is to loan him out the season coming, Championship maybe, League One, Scottish Premier League, teams from all those leagues interested. And this is, yeah, he is very much the guy at the moment. Him and Dane Scarlett, the guys, who there's a lot of buzz around. And I have to say, when you watch Devine, you can see why. He does have a real presence about him to go with the ability that, you know, the stars of the future often have.
Let me ask you this question then. The big barrier for someone like him is not talent. It's probably not attitude, looking at the way he played for England. It is, can you, even after your loan period in the Scottish Premiership or wherever, can you get yourself into a top six Premier League team? Is he that talented? Talented enough to, you know, all the managers are playing from, you know, six defeats away from a sacking. Is he that good?
I think talent-wise, yes. I mean, it's extremely hard to say whether he can, you know, to actually make it, you need such a confluence of things to happen. You need the talent, you need the attitude, and you do need a bit of luck. You do need the circumstance. You know, even someone like Harry Kane, you know, he got his chance and he took it. But I think he would be able to take his chance. But it is really, really important that the loan's right. You know, we saw that with Ollie Skip. You get the loan right, and then he came back and was ready. I think Troy Parrott ultimately had a really successful, potentially transformative loan. Yeah, having had a couple of tricky ones the season before, and Spurs are aware of that, and that is a decision they're not going to take lightly. But again, there is an element of good fortune there, because you know, you can end up at a loan club who, for whatever reason, are really struggling, and their manager suddenly is like, well, I need to rely on the experienced heads. I can't be trusting a 17-year-old, you know, or he turns 18 in August. But I think if that goes right, then hopefully by next season he will be in a position to start pushing for first team minutes, or they may think, well, let's give him another year to really hone what he's got. But I do think the talent's there. He's a really, really exciting player.
Now, this is the moment where Charlie has to reveal something to us. I understand there's a piece coming very soon in The Athletic where the writers who specialise in certain clubs have been asked to pick a five-a-side team. It's the old pub game. Pick a five-a-side team from the current squads of the teams they cover. And so, Charlie, you've been asked to pick your Spurs five-a-side team. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. All clubs have had someone who picks their five-a-side team.
Okay, well, before I will allow you to pick it and we'll talk about it before I explain my views on five-a-side, which is a whole separate thing. Who have you picked?
Well, I was saying to James and Tom before, this is very reminiscent of kind of January of this year when Spurs would lose a game and I'd be chucked to start the podcast off by kind of defending a 2-0 defeat to Chelsea before you guys could all tell me how wrong I was. So good to relive those happy times.
That is how we like it, Charlie. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I know. It's happy to be the fool guy. We should say as well that goalkeepers have to stay in goal. We're not playing some kind of mad rush goalie system where you might elect to go with five outfielders.
Sure.
So with that in mind, obviously Hugo in goal, and who I think with his cat-like reflexes would be very, very handy in five-a-side. Danny, you're shaking your head already at this point.
Of course, Fraser Forster. Wow. It'd have to be Fraser Forster.
No.
Fraser Forster would take up the entire five-a-side goal. Lloris is a terrible idea. Just get Fraser Forster to lie across the goal. They've got a score in a two-foot gap between his shoulders and the actual crossbar, of course.
Wow. Danny, this is meant to be a serious exercise and you're taking the piss.
No, it's not. This is the kind
this
of
is a noble pursuit.
This is the kind of stuff that's made me virtually unemployable in British media today. All right,
well look, you'll have your chance. I'll finish my team. So we did a little bit of debate on this as to whether it's worth going with a defender. I think it is when that defender is Christian Romero, who would be so terrifying to play five-a-side against in a cage. With things like the ball goes in the corner and there's that unwritten rule where you kind of let someone edge out. I mean, there is absolutely no way he's letting you edge out. He is just coming
through
the back
of you. No, he would play five-a-side ice hockey, wouldn't he?
Oh, it would just be so terrifying. Whenever an opposition attacker got the ball, he would be just breathing down their neck mm-hmm. and forcing them to panic and give the ball away. Then my wild card pick, which I know will get a lot of dissent, is a certain Tongi Ndombele.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think would be an unbelievably good five-a-side player. Impossible to get the ball off. Can beat a man at will, which is just so useful in fives to have that. And then Kane and Son, which hopefully you guys will find a way to disagree with that as well. But I think both of those would obviously just score a huge number of goals.
Is this game being played indoors? Because I worry that if it's one of those like sports centres and it's like really humid, I don't know whether Ndombele is going to be up for it.
I was imagining a kind of outdoor power league type.
Yeah, because you don't want humid sun, do you? That won't work at all. James, apart from fretting about the actual climatic conditions in which the game was going to be played, what do you make of that five?
I wouldn't have Harry Kane.
Oh. He's gone in both studs up there. Go on.
Look, we had to make this interesting. He can't do like his long raking passes because it's below head height, right? And obviously there isn't like the pitch dimensions to do that anyway. And I kind of think if you've got Son in the team, he's a much better forward in that kind of setup, I think. But
Kane can play anywhere.
If Kane could play in goal, I'd have Kane in goal. But apparently that's not allowed.
You can have him there. If you want to have him in goal over Lloris, you can. It's just that he can't then come out.
Could he play instead of Romero?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
that is an option.
Okay, I'll put Kane in goal then. That's all right. He can still shoot from the other end of the pitch, can't he?
All right, so the three people who have pined on this as yet have all got a different goalkeeper.
Who are you replacing? Who are you replacing Kane with?
Kane, Romero.
Yeah.
Lo Celso.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Good, fine.
But he's good. Think of the tenacity. If we're playing in some like cage somewhere, and it gets a bit tasty. You need a bit of...
I want this to be a place where all opinions are welcome. And with it, we've already had the nonsense of Lloris in goal, so you might have had Lo Celso in midfield, by all means.
Then Son.
And?
How many was that?
You've got one more.
Brian Hill.
All right.
I've got a player in my team who I think has not been mentioned yet.
I think it's going to be obvious which one of the four of us, or the five of us, sorry, four of us, one, two, three, four, which one of the four of us hasn't written their team down.
So I've got Kulusevski. Don't you think Kulusevski would be good?
Well, who else have you got before we get to Kulusevski? So you've got Lloris.
Is he playing in goal?
No, I've just gone for Lloris over Kane in goal. Then I've got Kane, Ndombele, Kulusevski and Son.
Kane.
So no Romero. Romero's just too much of a liability. He'd spark a fight with the opposition.
Well, that's what it's all about. That's what you need.
Is it?
Yeah.
But what about bad blood? What about?
So you've gone for Kane and Ndombele, Kulusevski and Son. Let me ask you about Kulusevski. Yeah.
Don't you think Kulusevski would be good?
He would be good. He was my first reserve. In my team, I said, if someone's running late from work and can't get to the start of the game, Kulusevski comes in.
He's got really good control and feet. He's deceptively strong. He's not like a mass. He's not like a sort of long distance runner, but you don't really need to be in quite the same way. And I just think he'd be really good.
Can score off either foot.
Yeah.
Well, those are
very well balanced.
Three very different teams. I had not, I must admit, anticipated the argument about Kane in goal. And
that's a great shout.
I tell you why it's a great shout.
I'd say it's the most sensible part of my team.
And I'm going to back you up on that now. And I think because it backs up my view that no matter what Spurs get offered for Harry Kane, they should never ever sell him. And if necessary, play him in goal if to fit him into the team when his knees have gone. And his ankles are made out of sticking plaster and bits of Meccano. I would put him in goal then, just to have him at the club. The first choice, and the one you're going to read about in The Athletic, is Lloris, Romero and Ndombele, Kane and Son. James has gone for Harry Kane. No, sorry. Let me get this right. Yes, James has gone for Harry Kane, Romero, Lo Celso, Son and Brian Hill. It's an incredible lineup.
Good on the ball.
It doesn't sound like it was made up on the spot at all, to be fair. Where Jack has gone for Lloris, just edging Harry Kane out of the goalkeeping spot, and then a very attacking-looking foursome of Kane and Ndombele, Kulusevski and Son. Well, if that doesn't get the listeners and subscribers going, then I'm not sure what will.
Wait, so what's yours then?
Mine is Forster.
What, this little thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, Forster. Davis.
Doherty.
Davis.
Davis.
Yep. Kane. Son.
Alan Gilsey.
I was going to do that joke.
And Jimmy Dimmock, yeah. I haven't thought about it because I thought this would take so long with the three of you arguing over it that I would not be required. I don't know who the other midfielder would be. I think Bissouma.
Bissouma would be very
Bissouma.
Good.
Bissouma. So Davis covers passing out from the back and tackling people. Bissouma covers lots and lots of ground. And Kane and Son, the important thing about Kane and Son is they play so well together. And I'm pretty sure that if they were playing in a two rather than a three, that they would find each other at close range as well. I think what's interesting about this is that even with just five players to pick, none of us can agree. I wanted to mention just for the older listeners, and you're all too young, I think, to remember, back in the day in the sort of late 70s, early 80s, when footballers could still be persuaded and could be insured to do things like superstars, the Evening Standard ran a fantastic five-a-side tournament at the Wembley Arena. And it was televised live. And the Evening Standard five-a-side football tournament, all the London clubs, Leighton Orient, Fulham, all of them, would enter a team of their current players. Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea put out their best possible players. And this spread to other sort of television areas over the course of the next couple of years, and then it became a national thing. But that kind of masters football you see now played on five was being played by the best players in the country. And it was pretty fantastic. The only thing I would say about it, they used to play on what was clearly a squares of blue carpet. And during the course of the evening, these would ruck up terribly. And so it's hard to imagine, but they'd be playing the five-a-side on worse pitches than they were playing the actual 11-a-side on at the same time. But go and look it up on YouTube, anybody listen to my voice, I disbelievingly, the Evening Standard five-a-side tournament, it was something else. It was just the best players playing the game that we all played in the playground. It was amazing.
That does sound absolutely incredible. There was something in 97 as well when Liverpool went to, I think it was Amsterdam, right. And they played in a tournament. I don't know if it was six or seven aside, but it was a small-sided tournament with Rangers. Rangers were definitely there because Gazza, there are various stories of Gazza being kind of on one.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, hard to believe. But yeah, Liverpool were there, Ajax were there. There are some images of that as well. Absolutely impossible to believe that even like as recently as 97, they could just go off mid-season as well and just play in this exhibition seven aside or whatever it was tournament. But God, I'd love to see it now. Although, imagine, you know, a City, Liverpool, Spurs, all those teams playing fives.
I mean, the argument we just had about Spurs, imagine the Manchester City argument about who was going to be in their five-a-side team. Jack, do you want to pick it off the top of your head, a Manchester City five-a-side team to end the podcast?
Edison in midfield?
I would have Edison
course,
in goal.
Yeah.
And then I would
Scott Carson in goal.
Bernardo, Foden, Mahrez and Zinchenko.
Wow, no Haaland.
No, he's not five.
No Haaland, no De Bruyne.
No, actually, I would have De Bruyne. I'd have De Bruyne instead of...
Surely. Why Zinchenko?
Zinchenko's technically amazing. He's so good. Ask any City player who the best technically player... who the technically best player of the club is, and they'll have Zinchenko near the top. Yeah,
is he Man City's Moussa Dembele?
No, he's not that good. But, no, but he's, I mean,
you know, the one the teammates love.
Everyone would
he's the player who the players will be like, oh, you should see this guy in training. So yeah, I have Edison, De Bruyne, Mahrez, Bernardo, Foden.
Yeah, that would be all right, wouldn't it? You could. I mean, the television companies would have to. Well, you'd get the ball back after they score, wouldn't you, for the kickoff? So you'd at least see the ball then. Listen, guys, thank you very, very much indeed. I hope by the next time we speak in a week's time here on The View from the Lane, some of these transfers will have ground their way forward as well. I don't want to become a modern football fan where the whole game is about transfers and it becomes kind of Love Island, will he, won't he, and all the rest of it. But I would like to see more progress, if only to satisfy Conte's lust for early transfer window deals. And remember that if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up right now and read all of our articles on Spurs, as well as everything else on the site. And as I always say, it's a magnificent pile of stuff. And there is plenty for you to read on the big transfers that do get done over the summer. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up now. Thank you, James. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Jack. And thank you all for listening. Till next time. Bye.
The Athletic.